Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 1, delivered on August 18, 2015. The title of this lecture is Introduction to Finance.
Introduction to Finance. Finance, as I mentioned in the last lecture, is a combination of economics and other subjects kind of thrown in, but it's primarily a subdiscipline of economics, focusing on transactions of businesses and individuals in their productive lives. It gets mathematical at times, but it also has a component that goes beyond math and underneath the math and all of that. First things first. Sir, have you ever made money?
Yeah.
You have. Did you ever do anything like mow a lawn for some money or anything like that?
Yeah.
Did you ever make money doing something for someone gave you some money?
Yeah.
No. Most businesses, the vast majority, the ocean of entrepreneurial enterprise in the entire world, now and throughout history, has been the individual just going out and doing something for money. It is called a sole proprietorship. Now, while our politicians, our news media, and all of these other important entities talk to you about the important entities called corporations, the reality of it is that the one-person show has always been the backbone of the expression of our desire to make money. No other way can even come close to comparing in terms of number, in terms even of volume of activity. Everything from the person who mows a lawn to the person who walks a dog or drags a cat for a neighbor to the person who provides love services for old ladies. These are all part of it. To the drug dealer on the street hawking his merchandise and paying the hooks to pull the customers in, to the prostitute standing in a darkened alley in Bangkok. Not that I would. Anyway, look. This is all business at its deepest, most fundamental level. My art as a landscape photographer began as a sole proprietorship. Eventually, I brought it up to the status of a corporation. And I will bring that up over and over again in this course. Here's what I know from what I've done in my life. And I've done that with others. Some I have left as sole proprietorships. All of them but one have just kind of died away. There's one that you will hear in the podcast, Dark Wraith Publishing. It's a sole proprietorship. The thing is that a sole proprietorship is a one-person show. You just doing something for money or for some other benefit. It doesn't have to be cash money. Sometimes you are engaged in enterprise, but money never trades in the activity. This is something that they should have told you about in economics classes, macroeconomics. In bad times, there is an economy that is essentially like a barter system. I do for you, you do for me. And it surges when times are bad and people don't have cash money. And then it slides away into the background during good times when people are making more money, so their opportunity cost of time doing things by barter goes up, so they don't do it as much. But it's always there. And it tends to it's not seen in numbers that the gray economy surges in recessions and then slides away in boom times. It's a one-person show. But here's the thing. You mow lawns and you get money for it. Now, you mow lawns for rich people over in Ironwood or someplace like that, or out by Lake Bloomington. You just have a truck and a lawnmower. And those rippling muscles of yours really look good in the sun when you're sweating. Anyway, so you're walking along mowing the lawn of a rich lady. You don't see her little poodle in front of you, and you run over it. You give that dog a show dog trim. She sues you. Well, the thing is that because the company is you, she'll take your lawnmower, she'll take your truck, she'll take your apartment with those lame-ass Nickelback CDs of yours. She will just go through your company to you because the company is you. So that means that in a sole proprietorship, you are all at risk. You get to keep all the money after you pay the bills, but you are liable personally for all of the bills of the company. There's unlimited liability to you as an individual, and that's the downside. Now, to a certain extent, you can mitigate this. There are insurance companies that have what are called BOPs, business owner policies, and you can go to them and describe what you're doing, and they'll say, well, we'll charge you $100 a year to indemnify you to a certain extent for the things that you do. But nevertheless, that all at risk is there on you as a business person. You are the company. Understand that you don't have to use your own name. Almost every state has a way that you can use create a fictitious name. Some states call it an assumed name. Now, here in Illinois, I've created a couple of these DBAs, doing business as companies. You go down to the county office, or you can download the form online. You fill it out, application for a fictitious name. You say, well, this is my real name, this is my address, and this is the name that I want to claim and use for my sole proprietorship, my business enterprise. And then you take it down to the county clerk's office. They'll say, okay, you have submitted this. We're going to stamp it and give it back to you. Now, you have to go to a business publication, and there are tons of these that do this in the state, in every state, and you pay them money, and they will publish. In this case, Alan Kring has applied for the fictitious name Emergent Light Studio, which was where I started my corporation. And the publisher posts it for 3 weeks. I think it's 3 weeks. It's been quite a while. But then after 3 weeks, if no one challenges the publisher sends you, in my case, the publisher sent me a notice. Your notification was posted for 3 weeks. No challenges were received by this publisher. And then you take it back down to the county clerk's office with the original forms that they had stamped to get it started, and you submit it, and they give you the final certification. You've got that name. It's yours, protected in the state. It's kind of like a trademark or something like that, or a copyright, really. But it's not legally like that at all in some ways. But anyway, in a few days they'll send you a nice hard card with the name of your business entity in big letters and its address, which is your address, the whole nine yards. And it's yours forever. Until you die, I should say. So that's what is a DBA. And actually, even some very large corporations create little DBAs. Partnerships create DBAs. Something that is you, but under another name. And a lot of banks and credit unions, you can go to them and say, well, I've got an account with you. Here's my certification from the state that this DBA is me. So if I bring in checks under that the name of this enterprise and sign them on the back, that's me. Can you please let me do this with my checking account? And they will let you do that. A lot of credit unions used to be really difficult with this, but I've discovered recently that they're being a lot more receptive to this, meaning to me that that's kind of like they've finally grasped that there are a whole lot of DBAs out there, that they're people who deposit money are working under. Okay. But there's another thing, too. I might have already told you this, but I'm going to. Woman, you are going to die. Did you know that? Yeah. It might happen in 70 years. It might happen. You walk out this door and a train hits you. Ma, ma, ding, ding. We pick you up with a spatula and we dispose of you. And then we move on with our lives. No one's going to cry for you. Well, some people will for a while, but, you know, we got work to go to and, you know, parties to attend. Okay. That's the thing about a sole proprietorship. It is you, so it dies when you die. It is gone forever. That's kind of like the downs. Well, in a way, it's the upside. Because since you have died, your business enterprise that was you dies with you. You can't hand it off to someone else. No, it's just regular assets you had that are in estate and all that kind of stuff. But it is immortal. It dies with you. Now, also, if you're doing it right, you have to do your taxes, and that gets to be a pain in the derriere, because you have to do your normal taxes, but you also have to fill out a form for your business enterprise, even if it's a sole proprietorship. It's called Schedule C, and you work out that income on that, your revenues and your costs, and then you report that as additional income to your 1040. But it doesn't end there, because then you compute your taxes on your 1040. But that Schedule C income also has to go to another form called Schedule SE so that you can calculate your Social Security tax. And then you calculate that. And once you see your tax line on your 1040, you put your Social Security tax on the next line from your Schedule SC. So that thing, it kind of blows me away, even to this day, and I've been doing this for years, how much of that money that you're making when that person pays you. I'm lucky if I can get the grand slam at Denny's by the time everything is, because, you know, you have to withhold for your taxes, for your sales tax, your state tax, your federal tax, and all of that. And then, of course, a lot of that money that you take in, you're going to have to plow back in to replace what you just sold, and maybe even expand your inventory. So it's kind of like really gets to be not fun at all once you start doing it the right way. Sole proprietorship. Now, the next one is a partnership. A partnership. It is in many ways just like a sole proprietorship. It is more than one person all, and they are jointly and severally all at risk. Unlimited liability. And that's why you really have to know your partner well to get involved in this. Because if you make money for our partnership, we've made that money. Now, that might really piss you off. You did the work, but I get half of it. The other part of it, and here's the other downside. I am not saying that you are a screw-up. But, man, you are such a screw-up. You know, you really did something bad. I mean, bad. I mean, we're talking Jared bad. It's both of us that did it. And I didn't even get to bother the candy, okay? You understand that if you screw up, we've screwed up. We are jointly and severally liable. That's why when you have partnerships, the real things, like accounting partnerships, law firms, all that, they haze you for years, make your life miserable as an associate to test you to see if you can handle everything so that they can bring you in as a partner. Did any of you see the movie Pursuit of Happyness? Yeah, that was actually a true story. You probably know that. But did you notice how those guys just went through hell? And the reason they went through hell is because if they were going to be brought in as partners in that brokerage house, those partners had to know for sure that the person that they chose among all of them was the best and was trustworthy to the end of his or her days. That's how it works in partnerships. Don't just join into a partnership because I like this person. It's like don't just go into a marriage because you're in Las Vegas and there's the Elvis Chapel. For God's sake, keep that in mind when you're forming partnerships. Now, the one thing that is different with a partnership is that a sole proprietorship, you can just start doing whatever it is you want to do. With a partnership, you actually have to file a form, a contract with the state. It's called the General Partnership Agreement. Now, I actually, in my very earliest days as a consultant, when I started doing consulting, I ran into a couple of little groups of people who were doing some business, and they said, well, we're a partnership. And they were operating in a manner that was consistent with partnership, but they were not in compliance with the law because they had never actually formally created a general partnership agreement and filed it with the state of Illinois. Understand this, when you file documents with a state or federal entity, The state or federal agency that is responsible never approves of what you do. They qualify it. It meets the legal standards as all they do. But you have to file the general partnership agreement, and the state Secretary of State of Illinois has to qualify that document. And then you've got a general partnership. Notice something, by the way. Businesses are state entities. The federal government has nothing to do with the existence of a company. It is and always has been a state phenomenon. Now the federal government by the Supremacy Clause and the Commerce Clause can declare, well, we have the right to do this and this and this with a company, but the existence of it is recognized at the state level. Interesting thing, the ultimate in states' rights. That's why when you choose the state in which you are going to incorporate, which I'll talk about here in a little bit, you choose it well. You don't have to incorporate in the state of your nexus of business. So, for example, my company, I almost always, when I was a consultant and I was forming companies for clients, I did them in Delaware because Delaware has a very mature business law. It has a court system that is, the judges are trained, highly skilled in understanding and being sympathetic to business interests. And there are a lot of states that are just downright hostile or ignorant about business. So when you form the company, at least at the corporate level, where you have to file articles of incorporation, all that, you choose a state that is friendly to business, or at least not downright hostile. And I found out over the years, hostile states would be the Dakotas, Florida, increasingly, Utah used to be a wide open Wild West kind of business environment, but they cracked down. Now I wouldn't recommend anyone incorporate in Nevada. Ohio was a difficult state. Having a corporation in Ohio turned out to be a real disaster for me at one point. But anyway, partnerships come in two flavors, and this is where I'll tell you some business consulting stories. There is the generic general partnership. Two blokes in a bus. Two ladies and a velociraptor. That kind of stuff. That's a general partnership. All at risk, the partners, all the, you know, you might have managing partners, but everyone is involved in the management in one way or another. Everyone is involved in the enterprise in one way or the other. Residual cash flow belongs equally to each part of the partners, and the risks and liabilities and costs belong equally to all the partners. Then there's this flavor, which I exploited quite a bit back in the day, the limited partnership. And let me give you one of my real life examples of limited partnerships. This really started many years ago, but a couple of fellows and I picked up on it in the 80s. There was a program being run by the federal government with parallel programs by the state governments to build up the housing stock in the country of low-income apartment housing for the elderly. Low-income housing for the elderly. They wanted to give incentives to companies to build apartment complexes for old people. And then the government would subsidize the rent after the places were built and they were occupied. What they did was they went out into the business community of the United States and to investors, and they said, we will provide matching funds in the form of grants, low interest, and no interest loans to companies that will build this low-income housing for the elderly, apartment complexes, small ones, bigger ones, but we'll give you, but you have to commit blood. We used to call it commit blood. Now they call it commit skin. But you have to commit blood. So if you have $5 million that you're going to put into a low-income housing for the elderly community, we will match that with grants, low-interest, and no-interest loans. The feds were in this. The states, a lot of states got involved in this. And what we did was we started a partnership. Three general partners. And then we sold limited partnership units, $50,000 each, to rich people, doctors, lawyers, dentists, architects, all those kinds of people. And they would get money from their investment in these limited partnerships. The limited partners have limited liability. Their liability is only to the limit of what they've invested. They can't be sued personally. They can't lose their asses in the investment other than the money that they put in. That's all the money that they could possibly lose physically in it. On the other side of it, though, they are not allowed to touch the management. They can't have anything to say as to what we're doing and how we're doing it. They can't be involved. They have to stand down and watch. That's all. That's how a limited partnership works. So we put the first one together and built a really nice, it wasn't a huge thing. It was like 70 units in a little community center in the middle. And, of course, then the government would subsidize the rent of the elderly people. So we paid ourselves a darn good salary because, hey, we were geniuses and we were the general partners. But then the limited partners, at the end of first year, we sent them their first two tax forms. One explaining how much they had made profit based on their number of limited partnership units and how much of the asset appreciation they got. Well, first of all, asset appreciation, no. The asset was going to depreciate, and we were going to load the depreciation into the front years just like everyone else would. And so that first, a limited partner with one unit that first year, the asset lost, your percent of the loss in that asset was $12,000. Oh, and then the K-1 where we report your share of the profit, well, we lost on your behalf $12,000. Sorry. Second year, more of the same blood. More asset depreciation, more blood loss at the bottom line. Every year, sending limited partners. All those people, they were calling us on the phone. They were just thrilled. When can we do another one? When can we put more money into this? When is your next low income for the housing for the elderly deal coming up? We want in right now. They were just tickled to death with all that loss. You understand why? These sons of bitches had put in 50 grand each, and within 3 to 5 years, they had losses against their real taxable income that they saved tax money out the butt. I mean, over the life, 7-8 years maybe, an investment of $50,000, they avoided a couple of hundred grand in taxes. They were pure tax loss vehicles. They were shields for rich people to induce them to invest. Now, does that sound evil and sneaking and bad? I'll tell you what, there are literally hundreds of thousands of old people living in nice apartments with nice rugs, painted walls, a place they can go at night to be with their friends. All because there was a trick that we could play so that rich people would actually pretend to care about old people. That was the bottom line, was that we were using the tax loss shield to induce rich people to give us the money so that we could build low-income housing for the elderly. Over and over, little general partnerships like ours, piss-ass little enterprises like ours, were doing this all over the country, and they were doing it for years and years until the 21st century when they started cutting it out. There are still a few programs in place, but not nearly as much as there was before. Did you get the idea? Not all businesses need to make a profit. And that just pisses me off when these books like this, profit is what it's all about. No, it's not. It is about enterprise. It is about production and creation. We made good money. We paid ourselves ridiculous salaries. And I had enough money I could have friends sometimes. Sometimes. But you got the idea? Limited partnerships show up all over the place in places you probably wouldn't even expect. One of the places where limited partnerships boomed, one of the first places where they turned a small industry into one of the largest business enterprise groups in the world. That was in video pornography. You put together a limited partnership. You charge a dirty old men who have a lot of money, $25,000 each. You put together 10, 15, 20 of those units, and then you've got the money to buy the cameras, the talent, location, shoot for 3 days, and then package it up in VHS and beta format, and you pour that out into the adult bookstores in the United States, Western Europe, and in the middle and in the Far East. You've made yourself a fortune, and you've made those limited partners a fortune too. Of course, then the old geezer said, can I watch the movie? No, you're a limited partner. You've got to stay away. Oh, man. Yeah, but that's how that industry became the largest business in the world, bar none. Never mind what you've heard. That's the biggest, and it was because of limited partnerships. It has expanded over the years. Limited partnership, the trick of a limited partnership to bring together money, spread in the entertainment industry. And films, indie producers of movies, people who didn't have access to the Hollywood moguls, and also people who did have access, but they were sick to death of these Hollywood elites telling them how to make their script, what to cut out of their movie, who to hire for the actors and actresses, and all that kind of stuff. A lot of the indie producers were pros, and they just did not want to go that route anymore. So they set up limited partnerships, sold the units, got together $1 million, $2 million, produced an indie movie, and then they put it at Cannes, Toronto, and all the other festivals, get a couple of awards, and then they could have the cred to go and do a bigger movie on a limited partnership trick again. That was the way it was. As a matter of fact, some of the early indie movies, indie movies some years back, they looked totally amateur, you know, the shaky camera and bad lighting and all that, but they were actually pro Total Pro done on limited partnerships or some other financing vehicle. One that was a Total Pro that looked like a total indie movie. It was a horror movie back from some years back. It was the first really of a found footage genre of horror movies. Bad camera, shaking, a lot of cuss words, just poor lighting in a lot of cases. Does anyone know what movie I'm talking about?
Blair Witch.
Blair Witch, absolutely. Pro, looking like an amateur. Another one a little earlier on was Cloverfield. It's just proliferated. And it's now in the music industry. It was pioneered by hip-hop artists many years ago when they were not being let into the old boys club because they were black or they were saying bad words to talk about horrible things. And so they said, FTS, we're going to go out and do it ourselves. Their accountants and lawyers put together limited partnerships, and now that is the way that a lot of garage bands finally are getting the notice that they deserve because they actually have some talent. Unfortunately, you also have a huge number that suck. Dubstep comes to mind. But it's the way it's being done. More and more businesses, people with ideas are saying no to the traditional investment banks. They're saying screw you to the venture capitalists and the Shark Tank crap, and they're going out on their own and they're finding the money to do it themselves through limited partnerships and other creative financing vehicles. So let that be a kind of a lesson to you. There is a way to finance, and there are even the creative environment has just exploded. Have you ever heard of GoFundMe? And things like that. I mean, that's really basically just another independent way of bringing together the money for your enterprise. There is actually an indie movie fundraising site, GoGo, that has financed some good movies too. Right now, I'm trying to get involved in a project with them to bring about a sequel to a movie that was fairly popular. But there you go. Partnerships, again, something that you see every day in the world. The movies, the music, they might very well be by a vehicle other than a corporation, which everyone in the business world talks about. The corporation is everything. Now, I'm going to give short mention to another one that's in the book. It seems like the finance textbooks and other business textbooks put this one up there on a level with the other big three, but I'm going to talk about this just briefly. It's called the LLC, the Limited Liability Company. The limited liability company is a hybrid between a partnership and a corporation. You have to file, it's formal, just like a partnership, you have to file the paperwork with the state of Illinois, or whatever state, and a membership agreement. Now, in a sole proprietorship, I'm me. In a partnership, you're called a partner, a general partner or a limited partner. In a corporation, you're called a shareholder. And we're talking about ownership here. In an LLC, the term for an owner is a member. There's a different term. And they all mean ownership, but for an LLC, it's a member. The trick with an LLC that is different from a partnership or a corporation, in a general partnership, basically, you're all equal in terms of liability, in terms of what your claim on the residual cash flow is. That's true of stockholders, too. It's just based on how many shares of stock you have. But in a corporation, the stockholders are not liable for the debts of the corporation. An LLC is kind of like a weird thing in between, off on the side. In an LLC, you can have some of the owners have greater claim to the ongoing cash flow. And some members have greater claim to the ending value liquidation of the LLC. That's the real trick, is that you can separate cash flow into different parts for different members. which you can't do in any other vehicle. By the way, LLC, limited liability. It's not like a partnership, it's like a corporation in the sense that the owners are limited in their liability to their investment. So they're not all at risk like they are in a partnership. What makes it similar to a partnership is that once you're an owner, you're pretty much stuck. It is really difficult, both logistically and legally, to sell your position out. Okay? By the way, I want to mention a partnership, I forgot to mention. A partnership dies when one of the partners dies. It is mortal. I need to put that down. It is mortal. So if you're a partner, you died. You can't just say, my wife gets my partnership. You can't. The partnership collapses. It folds right there. Now, if you set it up properly up front, what will happen is that essentially the old partnership folds up and transfers its assets to a new partnership that is all the partners except you, because you're dead, you're worm food, and they don't want you in the building anymore. Okay? But I understand that it's mortal. LLCs, this is something that is just... I talk to people who form LLCs, and I say, when does this limited liability company end? And they look at me, it ain't going to end. Well, if you look at the template for a limited liability company that is promulgated by states, they list an end date. It's supposed to be a project-based company. And it's supposed to finish and go away and be folded up. That's why one of the points of having an LLC is because some of your members can have claim on the liquidation value. They didn't want the cash flow along the way. They wanted the liquidation value when you close up shop. And so many people who are forming these LLCs, they're under the impression that it's like a corporation. It lives forever. It's not supposed to do that, and I'm just kind of mystified as to how they're filing with a state in such a way that the state is qualifying when they don't put a close date on the entity. But that's out of my realm. I don't touch LLCs. They are just too damn complicated. Go ahead. Bingo, exactly. It's got that protection. And that protection is absolutely essential, especially in higher risk enterprises. You know, if you're going to do something that has risk to it, you want your liability limited all over the place. That's why some of these supposed geniuses of business, these gurus of business, I won't mention any names, but his initials are Donald Trump. He's pretty much drilled every friggin' investment he ever started for other people into the ground. He came out smelling like a rose because essentially he just paid himself massively along the way, and then when the enterprise failed, all of his investors were left with doggy marks on their backs. Okay? That's the deal, is that with a corporation, you're not hurt. You're not touched for the liabilities. And that's the cool thing about the LLC, is if you've got a project-based thing, you don't want the company to live forever anyway. But you know that there's going to be exposures, risk exposures, that you don't want to personally be involved in. Yeah, an LLC would be a good vehicle for that. As a matter of fact, I do know that there are a number of movies or distribution companies for movies that are LLCs. You'll see it quite a bit. If you watch credit rolls, you'll see LLC. What they're doing is they'll set up the LLC, and then they'll to bring together funding through the members for the movie, and then they will essentially collapse the LLC by a pre-arrangement with another company that will buy up rights for all, or something like that, for the continuing showing of the movie. But that would be a logical thing, because making a movie has quite a few different exposure points for risk. And this would be a way that you could have the partners be, have the members be protected. And at the same time, you don't want to live with that movie for the rest of your life. You want to end the LLC, sell the assets to another, liquidate, and move on to another movie. Distribution is also being done this way in some cases. Okay, you're going to make the movie. What we'll do is set up an LLC that will be the distributor in the A-list or the B-list theaters and on the Blu-ray and DVDs. And then when we're finished after a couple of years, 5 years, we'll close up our shop and sell the residual to some other company that will do the long haul with the tail end of the cash flow. All kinds of tricks that are in this. I wonder if anyone's drunk this. Yep. Whoa. Anyway. Okay. That's an LLC in a nutshell. And I'm kind of trashing them if it doesn't. I've seen LLCs form that went south because they are complex as hell. When you've started to separate who gets what money, okay, well, we made $10,000 last year. We had 10 members. Well, each of them gets so-and-so. But then when we sell this business, those people who were getting cash flow all along, suddenly they get nothing. And the people who were sitting there not getting a cash flow, suddenly they get this huge pile because the corporation was building a massive asset base at the expense of cash flow to the members, other members. Wow, you can get into some really complicated things. Enough of that. The pinnacle of the business environment is the corporation. A corporation is a legal entity recognized as such by the state and thereby by the federal government. When you form a corporation, you fill out articles of incorporation. You file those with the state in which you want to incorporate. The Secretary of State reviews the articles for due form, and if they meet the criteria for a corporation, the Office of the Secretary of State of the State of Incorporation qualifies the Articles of Incorporation and sends you a notice of qualification. That is the business equivalent of a birth certificate. The state has recognized the existence, the new existence of a legal entity with rights and responsibilities under state law. It literally is a birth certificate. You go on from there immediately to file form SS-9. You don't have to remember this part, but file SS-9 with the federal government. That will get the federal government to issue you an FEIN, a Federal Employer Identification Number. That's the equivalent of the federal government issuing a baby a Social Security number. Literally, You take this damn seriously, creating a corporation. You're creating an entity that is separate from you under the law. And that's why accountants. Do I have any accountants in this class? Oh, of course I do, yes. You remember the fundamental equation of accounting? Assets equal liabilities plus owner's equity. That means it, now in accounting, that's your fundamental equation. In finance, that is even more fundamental because that plus sign means that there is a corporate veil that protects the owners from the liabilities of the business entity called the corporation. Understand that whatever your form of business, equity is the last thing that gets paid. Liabilities always, always come first, no matter what kind of a business entity it is. If you do not satisfy your liabilities in a timely manner before the owners, If you can't pay a bill, if you can't pay off a loan that's due in a corporation or even in a sole proprietorship, but in a corporation, if you can't pay the bill, they will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your mother wear furry costumes that please them. Mrs. Fox, it's a great starter kit. Oh, okay. Never mind. It's a little more mature. Assets equal liabilities plus owner's equity. In other words, the business is a legal entity. And so it has to take care of its own bills. And a court will not pierce the corporate veil and allow debt holders to go after the owners unless there is substantial evidence of the mixing of funds of the corporation and its owners. As long as the owners are kept separate from the business itself, its bank accounts and all that, in other words, the owners get their dividends, they get their capital gains, and all that, as long as they are diddling in the funds of the corporation, a judge, even in bankruptcy, isn't going to let the liability holders go through to the shareholders. Not going to let it happen. I'll tell you a story about that. But therein lies an interesting problem for a corporation. When you make money at the bottom line in a corporation, you are going to be double taxed if you're an owner and you get dividends. Look at it this way. Suppose at the bottom line, you made $10,000. That was your pre-tax income. Your taxable income was 10 grand. Now, let's say that you're taxed at the rate of, 20%. So that means that your tax is $2,000. So there's $8,000 left. Now, if you give that to the shareholders as a dividend, they get taxed on the dividend. That's the double taxation problem with a corporation. You get double taxed as an owner. The corporation has to pay tax before it can distribute a dividend. If you get a dividend, then you get taxed on the dividend. Now, what a corporation can do instead, it could just plow back. You understand that every dollar I give to a shareholder is a dollar that I don't have to reinvest in the corporation. If I plow back the money into the corporation, the capital gains, supposedly, at least theoretically, the company stock should go up in price. So it's a balancing act. Do I give my shareholders some dividend, and then I don't have that so I can make their share prices grow? Or do I just hold off and not give them dividends and hope that through our efforts with that money, we can grow the corporation and their stock price rises? It's a real problem. When I was a consultant, I did startup companies, young companies, companies that were reorged and bringing them back to life through because I was a reorg specialist. There were times we did not want to give money to the shareholders. We wanted whatever we made at the bottom line, we just want to plow it back into the business to grow it, to build the asset base, to create new products. And then they would put me out there in front of the shareholder meeting. And you'd have these shareholders just having a fit because they hadn't gotten a dividend. I mean, this woman, she just started ranting at me. I put money into this like 5 years ago, and I haven't seen one dividend check. You know, and she's just yammering and yammering. And I have to be a professional. I have to be nice. I said, look, bitch. You see, there's a problem, though, is that you've got this balancing act at all times. And there's even a worse problem. And I actually, this is just outrageous. A company in certain circumstances has to pay a dividend. The government, the IRS, will fine a company for inappropriate accumulation of retained earnings if it doesn't pay out some dividend that the damn IRS can then tax on the people who get the dividends. And that would just blew me away. I actually didn't know this. Honestly, I didn't know this until about 5 years ago. And I just was like, WTF. You're telling me that a corporation that is starting up, that is trying to put its money back in, you're going to fine that company for because it didn't pay out a dividend and thereby have less money to put back into its operation so its stock price could grow for those owners? Well, there you go. That's how it is. So that kind of throws another kink into the whole trick. Here's something interesting, though. These things come in two flavors. There are C corps and then there are S corps. The cool thing about an S corp is that if you elect S corp status, you don't get double taxation. Essentially, it's all dividend, counted as dividend to the owners by their shareholding percent. So in other words, if I hold 500 shares and you hold 200 and you hold 300, you know, it's just the profit at the bottom line. I get taxed on 50% of the profit. You get taxed on 20%. You get taxed on 30%. So the S corp is cool that way. However, you have to meet certain criteria. One of them is you can't have a large number of shareholders. There's a limit on how many shareholders you can have. A limit on the size of the business, and there are also other things that have to be met too. S corporation stock is a bear to sell. It's like these other ones. Once you're in, you're stuck pretty much. Now, in my case, I had the DBA, Emergent Light Studio. I've had it for years. And then in 2012, in front of a Business 100 class, I wanted to show them something really cool. So that evening, I actually created the corporation, Emergent Light Studio, right in front of them. The articles of incorporation, did it online, uploaded them, had some automated system, checked, make sure everything was okay, came back, said, all right, what's the name? And I said, all right, you folks, we got to have the name because you have to have an appendage on the name of the company. It can be Inc., Incorporated, Co., Company, and now they have LTD, limited liability, all that. But so I said, all right, this is your call. What do I put after the name Emergent Light Studio? And they were the ones, they voted on what they thought it should be, and that's what I typed it in, and I said submit, and there it was. Got it back within a little bit, and I showed them how to get the FEIN. I said, you just saw the birth of a baby. And I mean, it was messy and ugly, but it was kind of cool. Now, clean up the mess on the floor. We're going to move on. You can do that. What I forgot to do was you're supposed to, right off the bat, elect the S corp status. I didn't want to be a C corp and get double taxation and all that crap. But I forgot to do it that night. I was just all kinds of excited. Boy, I sure showed them something cool. And I forgot. And it just, okay, well, the IRS, at the end of your first year, you file your 1120S as an S corp. And if you're not an S corp at that point, you fill out kind of belatedly, elect S corp status. Here's where I learned a very big lesson. I did it in TurboTax Pro for Business. It turned out, and I submitted electronically, got that taken care of. Turned out the TurboTax did not send the S corp election form. Sent everything else, but it didn't send that. And I sat there on my fat ass for like 8 months, not realizing that the IRS had rejected my 1120S corporate tax filing because I wasn't an S corp and I hadn't filed for election of S corp status. I nearly had a heart attack. I thought, well, you know, I was thinking about ways that I could kill myself that would be. So I just threw myself at the mercy of this IRS rep and said, do you still have the form in TurboTax? I said, I do. I'll send you the file with the time tag and the date when I filed. And I said, do that. And also be sure to print it out also and hand sign it. Send it to us electronically right now and then print out the form, sign it by hand. And Oh my God, they let me off the hook. They sent me, about a month later, they sent me a nice little form. You are now officially an S corporation, all that kind of stuff. As I found out later, TurboTax, they already knew about this problem. There were a whole lot of businesses that were electing S corp status in the TurboTax documents. TurboTax just doesn't send that form electronically. Anyway, lesson learned. Yeah, buy diapers before you do things. Okay, the C-Corp. C-Corp is a very special thing. Almost everything I'm going to teach you in this course is about a C-Corp. Once in a while, I'm going to mention entities that are real odd hybrid breeds or partnerships. But for the most part, we in finance, perhaps inappropriately in some ways, focus on the C-Corp as everything. It's not everything, but it's a huge thing. The C-Corp has a special status. Most of the companies, largest companies in the country, are C-Corps. Matter of fact, almost every one of them. I think on Fortune 500, they're all C-Corps. But anyway, the C-Corp protects the owners from the liabilities of the company. I'll tell you a story about that, corporate veil. When I was starting in my PhD program, well, actually, I was in it, and then some idiot in administration at Ohio State said, oh, you never got an MBA. You have to take all the coursework and get an MBA in order for you to be granted your PhD. So before you get your PhD, you have to have taken all the coursework for your MBA. I thought, what the hell? So I went and I started taking these MBA courses. I was doing those at night, PhD work and teaching in the daytime. And I ran into, in the night MBA program, were some State of Ohio employees, regulatory agency employees who were working on their MBAs. And they knew that I already had a background in a lot of things. And we started talking one night, and they said, we've got a really interesting problem. And since you've been already doing consulting, we're bringing this to you. They bought me some dinner, and they told me a story. In the state of Ohio, they were working for the Ohio EPA. And in the state, they were going after bad guys, the people who were dumping toxic waste and all that kind of stuff and making a mess of the environment. This was back in the 80s when it was becoming really known that there were some major toxic waste sites, toxic waste dumpers and all that. They said, we have this guy here in the state. He forms a C-Corp, and then with the C-Corp, he buys a huge truck. And then he drives around to all of these companies that produce toxic waste. And for a large fee, he just takes it and puts it on his truck in barrels and pumps it into the tank on the one truck he has, and he drives away. Their liability for the toxic waste is done. They pay him a fortune to do this. He drives out into the woodlands in northeastern Ohio, and he dumps the toxic waste out, just onto the forest floor, pours it into the rivers back in the woods where no one sees what he's doing. He does this until we catch him. And then we file charges against the corporation. He never shows up. No lawyer shows up. And so we get default judgment against the corporation. And so what we get is we get to seize the assets of the corporation, which almost always are nothing but a truck that was hauling waste, a truck that is so toxic they have to handle it with hazmat gear. And he goes on. The corporation goes into bankruptcy. And then 2 to 4 weeks later, he creates another corporation and starts back in business doing the same thing with the same companies. He just keeps doing it over and over. He's done it, they said he's done it, as far as we know, 12 times. As soon as the corporation's liabilities exceed the ability of the corporation to pay anything, to pay them, the corporation is in bankruptcy, just immediately. Now he has, as the president of the corporation and working for the corporation, he's been paying himself insanely huge salaries. So there's no money in the bank because he's been paying himself a huge salary. So what we want to do is we want to go to the bankruptcy court and have the court pierce the veil so we can go to his assets. He has like 5 cars, 2 houses, maybe he has a third down in Florida. He has 2 yachts. We want to get them. So we want you to provide expert testimony in court to nail this guy, saying there really wasn't a corporation. It was him all along. It was a sole proprietorship using a sham corporation. So I went and I testified. That's when he brought his lawyer. His lawyer, I should have asked the lawyer to autograph the boot print he put on my butt. That lawyer just creamed me. I mean, it was almost like he made me his wife. I mean, he just beat the hell out. I mean, I thought I was so cool. Yeah, I'm going to be an expert witness. I'm going to really be cool. I mean, he owned my ass. And by the time it was over, I was just like, nah, 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 nah. No corporate veil piercing by that court. The judge said, you know, there's clear evidence that this is a scam, but he has met the criteria to act as a corporation and be treated under the law as a corporation. He never played with those corporate funds himself. He paid himself a legitimate salary. He did all of his withholding. The corporation did the withholding properly. There is no evidence that is we can track, we can see the state has brought nothing before us that shows compelling evidence to pierce the corporate veil. That's how powerful that corporate veil can be. Now, there is a bright ending to this story. That guy in the 1990s, it took him about 12 months, but he died from brain cancer. It seems that those toxic chemicals that he was pouring in the ground were soaking into his fat. And he eventually died badly. But still, this is a cautionary tale that as a debt holder, you get the prior claim on the assets of a corporation. Again, as the debt holder, you get the prior claim on the assets of a corporation. But as a debt holder of a corporation, that's all you get. The shareholders walk away unless you can pierce a corporate veil. And I've just given you a story about how hard that can be. But I have other subjects. I'll go into them next week. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.